Hello, I'm Paul Yeager, and this is the M2M Podcast, a production of Iowa Public Television and the show Market to Market. We look at behind the scenes of the show, talk to producers, and those involved in agriculture. Well, the many aspects of agriculture, including those that promote it. You may know her as JP Loves Cotton on Twitter, but who is Janice Person? We talk to her about her passion for agriculture and her trips in rural America. Sit back and enjoy. This one is a fun one. So have you been stopped on the street ever and someone says, hey, wait a minute, I know you from Twitter? Has that happened to you yet?
I haven't had that happen in the street, but sadly, I have had weird occasions of that, even involving Iowans in hotel bars.
Okay, so I have to ask. So, tell me more.
You know, because I go to so many agricultural events and things of that nature, I was in, I guess one of the times that was very clear in my mind, I was in Nashville at an event at the Opryland Hotel, and it may have been like a Farm Bureau event or something. And we were sitting at the bar with a few friends, and somebody came in and they sat nearby us. And they looked really young, and I probably should not tell you who she is, so we'll decide later whether you can get it out of me. But she looked really young, and she wanted a drink, and she didn't have her ID with her. And the bartender was explaining he couldn't serve, you know, anyone without an ID, and, you know, she is explaining, but I'm old enough. And I finally went, excuse me, I'm from Tennessee, and my mom's in her 80s, and she still gets carded because it's the state law. They have to card everyone. And after I said that, she goes, are you JP Loves Cotton? And I thought, I was just trying to help out the bartender, and now, like, okay, now did I just interrupt? You're like, am I busted for being a busybody? Or, you know, like, I just thought it was somebody from out of town and they didn't know the rules. And seriously, my mom gets carded and she's in her 80s. So it seemed like, you know. So anyway, she went back and got her ID and stuff. And we had a great visit. Now we're friends, and we're friends on Facebook and stuff. But it was one of those moments that I went, do I know her?
So was this person in town for an ag event?
They were. They okay. were.
Okay, so you're in the mindset. It would be one thing if she was in town for, say, I'm here for a country music thing, or I'm just in for some conference that picked Nashville, and
right.
then you would see. But, you know, you're in that. I might see anybody from agriculture.
But the conference anywhere. Hadn't started, and you know how things get in your mind. You know, you get really focused on, you know, tomorrow is when things start, and some friends and I are just getting together for dinner and stuff tonight. You know, we were in our own little world. And, yeah, it was funny.
So you're not from Nashville originally. Are you? Did you say Memphis?
I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, which means my mom went to high school with Elvis.
Is that true or just what everybody says?
Well, my mom was a little bit younger than him, but my uncle was in his graduating class. So, yeah, I mean, everybody in Memphis has an Elvis story in their family if you're a long-term Memphian.
So how do you end up from Memphis out of Memphis? I didn't think anybody ever left.
Well, it is such a great place. It's hard to do. I've had a very interesting path. I've lived in a lot of places in the U.S. I went out and I went to college in Enid, Oklahoma, of all places.
Yeah.
That was the first time I'd ever been in a rural area, and I didn't know what grain elevators were or anything along that line. And quite frankly, I'm not sure I really appreciated rural at the time. I was annoyed by things like tractors on the highway, which now I have a relaxed pace about. But, you know, when I would go home for the holidays, I was so excited to be back in traffic and, you know, like in my world. Right. So it was interesting living in Oklahoma for a while. I went back to Memphis, went to grad school there. Ended up in New York for several years working for a PR agency, and then I moved really rural and worked for a cottonseed company in Mississippi, and ultimately that's how I ended up joining Monsanto and now Bayer. And so I've moved with the company a few times, and currently I'm in St. Louis.
Of all those places that you've lived, now that you're able to look back at that move, were there any is there any tie between those communities? And I know that New York is a hard one to stitch in to those other places, but is there any tie or commonality between those locations?
You know, it's funny because everybody wants to set New York off on its own. I have encountered incredible people wherever I've lived. I mean, it may not be that you just meet them on the street in a place like New York, but I had like the greatest landlady and family kind of just take me in. Even like the pizzeria guy in New York, you know, he noticed my accent wasn't from there, and he had been in Tennessee during his years of service. So it's amazing how people can be so welcoming in places, even when you don't really expect. I mean, people in Oklahoma, because it was a 12-hour drive at the time. It was long before speed limits had gone up to the place they are. People used to invite me home with them on the weekends and things like that to, you know, sort of share their lives with me. And then my landlady in New York used to feed me pasta when she thought I looked hungry, I guess.
Well, it's the fabric of America, isn't it? It is the people.
It really is.
That tie them together. And rural people have values that are similar to city, and sometimes the people don't think that they do align, but they do when it is a genuine American. So when you open yourself up to Twitter and you start connecting the world again, did you find some of that same commonality of people involved in the social media?
I did, and I've been on Twitter. I just celebrated my 10th anniversary. They didn't send a lovely present, but they did give me a notification with a nice picture in it. But it's been 10 years, and you know, at the time, there weren't a huge number of farmers and things, but there was this incredible lady named Becky McCray out in Oklahoma, and a lot of Iowans know her. She does a thing about small towns, and she's written books on small towns, and her collaborator now, Deb Brown, lives in Webster City, is it? Oh gosh, okay. I'm going to be wrong about which part of Iowa, and that's going to be
right.
Really bad if I called that wrong. But I met some of them really early on, and then I started meeting farmers, and it really was the kind of thing that I found. You can connect to these people so authentically. You can learn so much. You can share, you know, the great moments of your life and then the really horrible ones. I can remember when a friend's family lost their barn to a fire, or others have been struck by a tornado, and now we see the flooding, right? And for me, you know, at the time I joined Twitter, I think I was living in Memphis, and it gave me a chance to really touch back on the rural part that I'd lived in the rural area of Mississippi for about a dozen years. And so I was once again living in a city, and it gave me a chance to really have true touch points and see the day-to-day instead of just the news and headlines. And I think that's something that a lot more of us ought to get for groups that we're not living in the midst of. You know, I think it might help us with a lot of topics of polarization these days.
Well, I think you find that so many people, when they join Twitter, you tell them, okay, just follow 10 news organizations or reporters that cover something you're interested in. And then it kind of starts spreading out from the news organization to the reporter to a super fan, and then it does become people. And that's kind of how you broaden your approach. I know when we started the market-to-market Twitter pretty heavily was, I said, I'll follow anybody back that's involved with agriculture. And it's not just other news organizations, and it's allowed us to connect with people through that media. And we say who's running the account and try to let people know, you know, what we're up to. And it's the whole brand versus person. And, you know, our two lives are a little different there, but it is still about hearing what's happening. I know when we had those floods recently in western Iowa and Nebraska and South Dakota, Missouri, the pictures were just incredible. But you knew what those people were feeling, and people were genuinely interested about what's happening in those locations. And that to me has been the joy of Twitter, to tie these people and tie everyone together.
Right. And I think something that people don't necessarily understand so much is You know, you can sit there and you can lurk and you can take in information. And we all have a lot of people that follow us that do that kind of thing. But Twitter gives you a platform where you can actually get your voice heard. And I think for those of us in agriculture, that was really monumental shift about 8 or so, 10 years ago. And, you know, and I've had friends who were featured in USA Today, and I was on the BBC and all these things. And they all came about because we were on Twitter and we were talking about things that matter in the world, not just what we ate for breakfast that morning or whatever. You know, I mean, I talk about those things, too. But when you talk about things that really matter and you talk about things that impact your life, you certainly end up having people come to you and ask you questions. And, you know, today I had somebody send me a message and it had gone back and forth on social media. And I finally gave her my email. And, you know, she was asking me, how do I add value the way others do? What do I do? And one of the things is you have to be honest to yourself, right? Like, I don't do it the same way anybody else does. Or, you know, I love Joe's pictures and my pictures are okay, but Joe's are fantastic, right?
Right.
And your podcast is this and somebody else's podcast is that. And I don't even have a podcast, right? Like, it's really easy to compare yourself. But I think if you go into social media saying, this is a platform for me, and what do I want to accomplish? What do I want to get from it? It's really not about competition in any of the efforts I do. It's more about connection and connecting on the information that's important, connecting on the people that are important, that kind of thing. And I think that gets missed when people think of Twitter.
When I look at your Twitter account and I look at your username, JP Loves Cotton, did you initially try to get Janice Person, or what did you try to get first?
No, actually, that's it. I wasn't smart enough to do something. I think I may have tried just Janice or, you know, Janice or something, but that was long gone. And I think I do own the Janice Person. I don't tweet from it, but I think I have that. For me, when I first got on Twitter, I wanted to convey a connection to agriculture in my name. Because I was using it, I started using it for work. I was on the PR team and was going to use it to see sort of what was happening out in the world of agriculture and find stories that we could take to media and things along that line. And so for me, I was working on the cotton business, and I've been working in cotton for decades now, God help me. and so there weren't other people in cotton out there from what I had been told. So I did that. Some friends in high school used to call me JP. I always sign my emails with JP. So I did JP in cotton. And then I thought positivity. I really, I'm a positive thinker most of the time. And I remind myself to be positive the other times when I'm not. And so anyway, it was way too long for a long time when it was 140 characters.
Right, right. You chewed up a lot of real estate with that.
It was way too long. And for a long time, I thought about changing it. But it became a personal brand somewhere along the line. And for me, you know, a lot of the work I've been doing, so I set up my Twitter account and other people, I was using it to connect to other people in Memphis at the time, and I'd go to tweet-ups there, and I'd meet all the local bloggers, and they would go, oh, you're the cotton girl, right? And in Memphis, people think they know something about cotton, even though they don't know anything about it, probably. Like, they know the crop is important to Memphis, and they know there's a carnival with the name cotton on it, and they know they wear jeans, but I brought a totally different view of it. And so it's been amazing over the years how many people feel like when they're driving across the U.S. and they suddenly see a cotton field, they have to take pictures and send it to me.
Because, like, you've never seen one before.
Right. But the thing is they know I will be excited for them, right? Like, they've just seen something that they're excited to see, and they have a connection to somebody who knows something about it. And so they're like, they know I'll be excited to see it. So they'll send it to me and say, hey, Janice, what's going on with blah, blah, blah. And then now it's transferred to any crops in the South. All my Midwestern friends are like going, is this a rice field? Tell me what this is about. And stuff. So it's really nice that I ended up falling into a space where it was easy for me to represent agriculture. But what's really fun and a total accident was how many people who aren't in agriculture get interested in the idea of cotton, because they do like their clothing that's cotton.
Right.
They all have a favorite hoodie or a favorite pair of jeans. And so I fell into this wonderful ability to connect the ag and the consumer side.
Well, and I have to say, you've got the blue check mark, so Twitter must think you they verified you in the Twitter world. When did that happen?
That happened several years ago. It used to be a very, very interesting process that nobody could understand how you got verified.
Right.
And then they opened it up where there was a clear process. And part of the process included how why do you need it, right? and I will tell you, my website and stuff, I set up a website with janiceperson.com because I realized if people looked for me on Google, they found any person named Janice, right? Like, my last name is Person. So Janice.
Oh, I see
Person
what you're saying. Yeah, I gotcha.
I mean, any person named Janice could show up. And that means a woman who happened to be shopping who was named Janice, and she was the person on the scene. It was a mess. So mm-hmm. I did a lot to try and own that on Google SEO. But then I was able to leverage that along with a little notoriety. So I had spoken at South by Southwest. I just did it again. So I had some acclaim in the space of trolls and disinformation online. And I put all that stuff together as a argument to present to Twitter about why I should have a blue check mark.
Oh, and that's a...
And I won.
You did. I absolutely.
I'm still surprised at times.
How often do you think? So tell me about your day job, because it sounds like the two really intersperse quite a bit.
It really does. I mean, my personal passions were driving me to do a lot of this, and at the time it was Monsanto, and I had a boss there that wasn't sure exactly what I was doing, but I kept telling him, look, if I did this for the company, I could really show you guys some value. I think there's a different space than running the company Twitter account. We had other people doing that. And my boss was the kind of guy who said, well, okay, Janice, you can do that like 25% of your time. And he knew I would work so hard at it that it would, if it didn't become anything, if he gave me 25% of my time for several months, he knew I would let it go. But it did. And then a year or so later, they made it a full-time job for me. And then a few years later, the company was looking at this disconnect between those of us who know and love agriculture so much and people who really love their food. And the people who really love food were trying to learn more about it. And things like documentaries that some of the folks at Iowa State, like Wendy Winterstein mm-hmm. and Steph, will talk about, you know, it didn't represent what we found in agriculture was accurate and true. And so for us, the company actually said, well, we're gonna spend money. We're going to put people on this topic. And Janice, we would like for you to be one of them. What do you think we ought to be doing? And so it was a very unique spot for me to be in. Part of it was because I had earned the spot with doing this stuff nights and weekends. And part of it was I'd also worked my tail off for all the jobs, you know, the company had given me. Mm-hmm. And so now here we are 5 years later, having spent 5 years going out and meeting members of our community where they are and trying to bring them to agriculture and trying to take agriculture to them. The company, we just did a really nice event in Austin at the South by Southwest Festival. And I think, you know, that in many ways for me felt like a bit of a culmination of some of our events from 5 years ago when we first attended a conference like that that draws in hundreds of thousands of people from all around the country and the world. And agriculture felt really out of place at a place like that. To this year, we had lots of people in agriculture attending. Quite a few of us were on panels. and Bear and Land O'Lakes was doing a special kind of exhibit area to let people immerse themselves in the topic of agriculture. So it's been an interesting path to combine my personal passions and the work, my day job. But it's been one that I think has been really successful both for me and the company, and hopefully they would agree.
Well, you mentioned Joe. I believe you were talking about Joe Murphy. We had him on here a couple of weeks ago with the Iowa Soybeans organization here in Iowa, and he's heavily involved with the Food and Farm, and they call it the Food and Family Project. How similar are the two? How familiar are you with what they're doing in Iowa, and is one taking a page from the other, trying to do exactly what your day job is doing now?
Yeah, I work with actually a lot of those state and local kind of efforts. What's interesting is when I go out on a lot of these more national kinds of events, I'll be attending a mom blogger conference in a few weeks. I will meet people from all over. Some of them will be known to people in our home states, and some of them won't. So the food and family, or in some states it's food and farm, other states it's farm families. I frequently get a chance to say, hey, I don't know if y'all have met this blogger, but she's somebody who's really interested in food. And as I talk to her at lunch, she seems perfect for what you guys may be doing. So I think we've tried to work together. I think all of us it's trying to lift all boats. So, you know, the folks in Iowa are doing what they can to raise attention for what's really happening in Iowa in agriculture, which people like me, I will tell you, there is a time where I had no idea what happened in the state of Iowa. I probably thought it was a flyover state, even though I was living in Memphis, right? Like, it's kind of embarrassing now because I've had a very different path with the state. But I think, you know, a lot of folks would be in a place like Minneapolis or even in Des Moines and not know anybody in agriculture. And so they're trying to lift up Iowa agriculture, and they're not doing it at the expense of Illinois or something. Illinois has their own efforts to rise up Illinois agriculture. Then the, you know, National Corn has some things around corn. I think they all kind of work together. And most of us, it's funny, most of us know each other pretty well. So Joe, actually for a long time, a picture that I used as my profile photo was one that Joe and I had taken together.
Oh, isn't that fantastic?
He happened to be in St. Louis and I was speaking to the group, right? And we were both so giddy. We got these pictures taken, and I'm like, damn, I look so happy in that picture. I look good. And so it was my profile photo for a while. But I think most of us in agriculture really love working together. And when you're less than 2% of the population, we really don't need to be throwing each other under the bus. Like, whatever we can do to help each other rise at the same time, you know, every once in a while, I may need a lifeline from somebody, and hopefully sometimes I can throw one out to somebody else who might need one to rise up.
Well, and I know that's kind of a lot of the way his job has gone and what the Food and Family Project. So I want to go back to your Iowa comment here. 20 years ago, if I would have said Iowa, what came to mind?
Okay, now I'm going to show my age because 20 years ago I had been to Iowa. But
okay, so we'll go 30 then.
I would say when I was in college, was the first time I'd been in a rural state for anything other than passing through, right? And you're looking at it from a college student's lens. And seriously, like, I didn't know, like, what was there in Iowa besides corn and soybeans? And for me, I was a city person, and that wasn't something that was highly attractive to me, right? And at a point, I started working, I did an internship with some agricultural magazines, and I can still remember my first trip to Iowa. Lord love me. It was a custom applicator expo that was in the Amana colonies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Along I-80 between Iowa City and Des Moines, for those not from Iowa.
Exactly. And it was the first time I had been, and it was like one of my first big business trips. And I was the college student, grad student, something like that. along with a carload of men in their 40s. And so they were really lovely people, but we were just in very different places in life. I think I was close to some of them's children's age or something, right? And I can remember I got to drive a Terragator, you know, one of those huge things that spray. And I just got to spray water, of course, because it was just an expo. But I can remember, like, the fear of God when I saw another machine was riding on the same field, and I thought, I'm going to break it, and my boss is going to kill me. But from there, that first experience, I've been back for, there was a 140 conference in Des Moines, and I think there was one up in Ames, even. There's, I've been to the World Food Prize, of course. Some fine folks have hosted me at the Iowa State Fair, so I've had pork chops on a stick.
Okay, I was going to ask if you've been to the State Fair. Okay.
And all that stuff. A great person I met, this is how I've done a lot of this, a great person I met from Twitter named Matt Eddy. Is right outside Des Moines.
Yeah.
And he told me that he runs this, the Animal Learning Center. I'm not sure what they call it anymore.
You are spot on. Matt Eddy is a ag teacher at Southeast Polk High School, about 30 minutes from where we sit. And yes, he runs the Animal Learning Center, and it's baby animals. The animals are born right in front of fairgoers with a pork chop on a stick.
It is
in their hand.
It is amazing. So I can't remember why I was in that part of the world, but he said, "Well, you have to make time, and you have to come to the state fair." So I ended up, spending the weekend seeing the state fair, and he was so nice. He had a couple of his students take me around on a golf cart to help me understand the state fair, like how it was laid out. I was a city girl. Like when I went to the fair, I never went to the agricultural sections. Like my family, it was kind of smelly and like, we wanted to go on the rides and we wanted to eat all the food and stuff. And as children, we didn't know. And my parents, weren't, I'm four generations city girl. So, my family didn't really know agriculture and we weren't sure what you would do if you went over there. Right. Like, so it's been really nice to hear how so many states have taken up an opportunity to invite other people in to see the other side of the state fair. And Iowa certainly does an incredible job. I mean, that learning center makes everyone want to come. Like it's very different than when I was a child, obviously, at fairs, but they do such an amazing job of kind of helping people understand what's happening in Iowa. And I'm impressed. Every time I'm up there, I meet such incredible people, and I learn so much from, the World Food Prize. I'm still kind of blown away by that when I was able to go with one of the people at our office, Rob Fraley, actually won a World Food Prize, and I was able to go and attend with him. But part of what I was able to do is bring together a tweet up of all the people I'd met in Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And so, I was able to give my friends in Iowa that opportunity to meet a World Food Prize winner the week he was receiving his prize and ask him anything they wanted to. And yet the next thing I knew, I was like with the Prime Minister of Iceland or something, like it's a very interesting space, right?
It is. And you marched a couple of things that we do here at Iowa Public Television together. One is covering the Iowa State Fair. We spent a lot of time at that event, and it does bridge the rural and the city, and we all come together. Last year, there in 2018, there was a large dinner on the Grand Concourse, the main street of the fair, where hundreds of people were getting a chance to eat and intermix and ask a producer, because some of them never had met a farmer before. And then you mentioned the World Food Prize, and just here today as we record this, Ken Quinn, the longtime head of the World Food Prize, has announced his retirement, and he has done a lot for spreading that word. And I see that you tweeted recently about Norman Borlaug and talking about wheat. So you kind of understand how that world mixes. What do you think? Will Norman Borlaug, does he get enough credit or too much credit for what he's done with agriculture?
You know, I occasionally wonder if those of us in agriculture talk about him too much, but people don't know who he is in other circles. So it would have been his 105th birthday, and he was just amazing. But I think he's an example of so many amazing people in agriculture. He did win the Nobel Prize for saving a billion people, so I don't want to in any way minimize his story. I'm amazed by it, and I had the opportunity to meet him and know some of his family members and things. He is an incredible man and deserves to be held up and thought about. But at the same time, when I do that, I like to highlight that there are a lot of people that are continuing a similar legacy. You know, I've met a wheat breeder who lives over in Morocco and is still doing the kinds of work that Norman Borlaug would just be smiling so much about. And then he would have a million questions for what Filippo is finding, right? Like, I mean, he would want to understand, well, what are the disease pressures here and what kind of insects are they dealing with? And I think helping people understand, here is somebody that those of us in agriculture truly admire, and there are people who are still doing that work, has a lot of value. And Norman is certainly one who reaches that. I would say Ambassador Quinn is also somebody that deserves a lot of credit. I mean, there's a lot of Iowans that have that. One of my I was lucky enough to be dear friends with a man named Kevin Eblen from Creston, and Kevin died much too young. But, you know, in the time that I got to know him, he taught me so much about work and really being passionate about what you're doing and making sure you find time for your family and all those kind of things, along with all the great work stuff he taught me. So I think there are a lot of, you know, native Iowan sons and daughters that we should be proud of and shine a light on and, you know, make sure other people understand how awesome some of them are. I wouldn't have said that when I was in college.
I was just going to say,
they existed.
You know, for being a fifth generation or fourth generation city person, you can speak real well about some of the pioneers of this industry that you're now working in. So when you go, say, Thanksgiving or Christmas or a holiday with some of those family that haven't, I mean, now granted, they've been with you for all these years of your career change, but do you ever think early on when you were involved in ag, did they kind of just, oh, what is she doing now? What? Why is she bringing all of that up? Did you get some of that at the dinner table?
You know, it's so funny because now when I started in agriculture, city people weren't necessarily all in and interested. In fact, when I lived in New York, people kind of thought, whatever. So I would say I worked in PR instead of I work in agriculture, right? So, and now on the other hand, when I'm in New York, I say I work in agriculture and people have a million questions. So I think my family, I had a bit of a problem there for a while. Like every new discovery, I felt I had to share everyone. And that may have been a bit overwhelming. But my brother-in-law does the same thing with roofs. So there you go. Oh. He's a roofer and he loves his job. And we've been on roofing tours of gosh knows how many places. So I think in my family, people were okay with it. But it was interesting when I would go like for a reunion with like school friends, people would frequently go, excuse me, what do you know about farming?
Right.
And they didn't know that I had like been submerged and immersed in this whole world. And I really have, like, the first farmer I ever visited was a guy in Louisiana, and he took time to show me what he was doing with the soil. I've always had a huge environmental interest in my life, and the earth is something I've cared very deeply for. And so to meet Mr. Ray in Louisiana and have him tell me things about the soil I had no idea about. I mean, I'd taken geology classes, I had no idea what he was teaching me. It was so amazing with these minimum till and no till things that, I think it's a pretty interesting road to have been on. And now a lot more people want to hear those stories than they did 20, 30 years ago.
So I'm going to ask now about your town that you live in now. In St. Louis, the average person probably thinks, oh, the Cardinals, or wait a minute, isn't that where the Rams used to be, or the Blues or something? Not everybody always understands how strong of an ag community St. Louis is. Your company.
It's amazing.
You know, you think Purina. You know, there's an ag base there. The American Soybean Association, or the American Corn Growers, are they based? Or are
the
they
national,
both based?
National
yeah,
Corn
the national
Growers
office.
And American yeah. Soybean. Yeah, they're both here. You know, and people don't think about it. The St. Louis Botanical Garden, like a lot of people only think about that from the Chihuly Gardens and things along that line. But they have a big area that's about gardening, and they have vegetables, and they have an depth of experience and knowledge at that botanical garden that is amazing, and they are willing to share that broadly. And also there's the Danforth Center that is doing amazing things for crops like cassava that are a staple food in Africa, but people like us may not be familiar with it. St. Louis has a lot going on. I would say it's one of the major hubs of agriculture in the world. With these rivers coming together right in this area, I think it was destined to be that way, right? I think California gets it because of their climate, and they have so many different, you know, crops that you can grow out there and things. But I think St. Louis is so well located with the rivers coming together, and, you know, like it's not far from the South, and it's not far from the Dakotas, right? So you can kind of get here from almost anywhere pretty quickly.
So then my question is how good are the Cardinals going to be, or are you not a Cardinal fan?
I love the Cardinals.
Okay, so
and I hope they're going to be a great year.
The new manager, are you okay with Mike Schilt?
I'm okay with Mike. I like what I knew for a long time, but I'm good with him.
Yeah.
I think the Cardinals, I was just looking, they were in Memphis last night, my hometown.
Yep, I saw
with
that.
The Redbirds. And it was exciting to see that the Redbirds, you know, they got some scores on the board too, right? Like they're not going to make it easy. So I'm always interested in the season, and it rarely has gone as well as I would like, but there are those years that you know they're coming eventually again, right? So we've had a World Series championship since I've been here, so I got the fever pretty bad. I went to a Blues game the other night because I like sports and I love being out with other folks who love it. So, you know, I was watching the Blues play, and I got to see my first hat trick in person. And I mean, it's amazing. I'm very lucky in that place like this to be able to have those experiences.
Well, when in Des Moines, we have the Iowa Cubs, and so when Memphis comes to town, I basically tell everybody, there's nothing else going on those 8 dates, because that's, I want to see the future Cardinals in there. And I was there when Ponce de Leon got drilled in the side of the head and went down on a day game. And, you know, that's my sons, I've made one of them. I said, hey, let's get a book and let's keep track. Let's start getting, we don't do autographs that much, but we did when they came in. And it's like, oh, wait, we saw him. Now he's with such an, now he's a major leaguer. And now he, you know, it's been kind of fun to see him come up there. When they are so close to the majors.
I also like the Yankees, which makes people in middle America less than happy. But
yeah, we're done. Well, thanks for talking, Janice. It's been good.
But I was able to go to their spring training camp 1 year and stuff. And I mean, but I've been to so many baseball stadiums because I just love the sport. I mean, I've gone all over the country. I get to go to games. So I've tried to go to all the big stadiums.
So do you think in your travels of agriculture around the country, is there a sport that ties us all together?
Oh, wow. I don't know. Here, baseball is definitely the thing.
Yep.
And I would say in agriculture, college sports is. I didn't go to one of those colleges. my team did not make the NCAA this year. So it is kind of interestingly nice how people compete, but my goodness, like, it gets pretty brutal some days when there's a close game.
Well, you know, when you have KU and Missouri who used to play, who don't play now, so that rivalry has kind of changed a little bit. And if you go into Kansas and you see all the Kansas State stuff everywhere and the Cowboys in Oklahoma at Okie State, they just absolutely are so passionate about the orange and black there. And it is kind of, you're right, the college does probably tie them together more than a pro team. So it's like, whatever the college team's doing, we're for.
Exactly. My friend Martha went to see Iowa State play basketball in Kansas City a week or so ago. Yep. I'll be at Texas A&M soon. I mean, I think people get to know about other people's areas basically because we travel for sports.
Right. That's a good way to do it. I mean, that's how I know much about St. Louis is because I've been there enough. Yep, that's exactly right. Livestock does it too. I suppose we should actually talk about cotton before we leave. What's the biggest challenge for cotton this year?
You know, this year it's interesting. A friend of mine just finished his harvest yesterday in Alabama, and normally he would have been finished somewhere around Thanksgiving or Christmas. So some of our farmers in the South are still reeling from such a horrible year as they ended. Cotton acres look like they're going to be up. The price is okay. You know, it's not great, but the price is okay. So cotton acres look like they're going to be up. If you look at the way water flows, though, folks down in the areas of Mississippi and Louisiana have a lot of water already to deal with, and it's not going to get better anytime soon. So, you know, I'm hoping that Texas and the East Coast and some of those areas have a really good crop, and I hope that there's some amazing way that people in the Mid-South can get their land in shape and can farm it. I mean, there's a lot of land underwater, just like we've been seeing in the Midwest. I think it'll probably hit the news more here in the next few months, as I don't know that the Dakotas is ever going to thaw out, having seen some of the footage up there,
it's crazy.
Right?
Yeah,
but I think you're going to hear more about flooding in the southern parts of the U.S., and that's definitely going to impact cotton growers. The other things I think are impacting cotton growers is a lot of people think, wow, this is so soft, I want to buy it, and it's not cotton, and it's like a polyester or something. And then after they wear it, they realize they're sweatier and stuff like that. So, you know, looking at tags is a way that everybody can help cotton, because if you're buying cotton, you're creating that demand. So buy an extra pair of jeans if you like, you know, a different color, a different style cut or something. But yeah, I think I hope it's a good year, but I'm a little bit nervous for people in the Mid-South.
Yeah, I'm looking at I just pulled up the one of the things I'll post on the Market to Market Instagram page through the stories is a look at whatever weather map is of interest for that day. And the one that I've been kind of following a lot is all the river levels, where you've got purple and red, which means major to moderate flooding. And it is all the way from New Orleans upstream, all the way I see up almost to Canada, South Dakota, pretty purple right now. Minnesota is that water just keeps coming down. And I was talking to people in western Iowa recently, and they were like, yeah, we know more is coming, and maybe we'll get some acres planted. But it is going to be a story if it does continue along. And yeah, you're right there where the two river, the Missouri and the Mississippi come together. So you'll see a lot of our water.
We get to see, you know, I will tell you, I mentioned Mr. Ray down in Louisiana, the first farm I ever went to. I think he had some beautiful Iowa farm ground.
Yeah,
there
he probably did.
Come down river, because he had some areas that were floodplain, and then he had some areas up higher on a ridge. So we appreciate that nice Iowa soil further downland. It's in the spring, it's really hard.
It is. We'd love to take some of it back in some of those areas right now. So, well, I just greatly appreciate you taking time to discuss things, and it's good to put a voice to the face or a voice to the words that we've read of yours for a number of years here on Twitter. And you can always follow her at JP Loves Cotton, Janice Person. Thank you so very much for spending time with us today.
Thanks. I really appreciate it, Paul.
Thanks for listening to the M2M podcast. We really appreciate you making it this far. We'd love a 5-star review or to share with a friend. Hit me up at Paul Yeager on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.